So today we're looking at Dhammapada verse 315, which reads, Nagarang yatha pachantang gutang santarabahirang evang gopetha attanang khano vo ma upachaga khanatitahi so chanti nirayam hi samapita, which means just as a city on the border is guarded inside and out, thus one should guard oneself. Don't let the moment pass you by. Those who let the moment pass indeed sorrow. Indeed, it is they who are cast into hell. So this verse was taught by the Buddha in regards to a group of monks who came to visit when the Buddha was dwelling in Savatthi. The story goes that these monks had spent their time in the borderlands. So we're talking about the area at the edges of a kingdom. At that time, countries were drawn up according to the reach of a given king. So the king would be able to police a certain area, but as you got farther and farther away from the capital, it'd be harder for the king to ensure the safety of the people. So the borderlands were always considered the most dangerous, at the edges of the kingdom. And there was this one city or town or area where people dwelt. And these monks, finding it to be, I guess, peaceful and probably quite natural, being far away from the urban areas, found it to be suitable for the practice of meditation. It so happened, however, that after they entered into the rains, they spent 1 month, the first month of the rainy season, where they would have to be stationary for 3 months. So the rule is for monks that during the rains they will dedicate themselves to the practice and determine not to travel, which is convenient considering that during the rains it's not suitable to travel anyway. So it's a good time to dedicate to full-time practice without travel. So as a result, the Buddha laid down the rule, monks aren't to travel during the rains. Just makes sense. And the first month was fine. They were well cared for by the people in the area, who appreciated having them and having their teachings and having their guidance and having religious people there to support and to learn from and to take as an example and to take guidance from. But at the end of the first month, some bandits attacked the city and kidnapped some of the locals and, I guess, stole and pillaged some areas of the city. And the people completely became absorbed in defense of the city and finding a way to get their countrymen back from the bandits, and lost all interest in spiritual matters, including taking care of the monks, even providing them with food. I mean, and so for the next 2 months, the monks spent their time in great difficulty and discomfort. And this all came to light because when they after the rains was over, they were quick to leave the area, went back to Sawatthi where the Buddha was staying. Sawatthi, this big city in the center of that kingdom. And came to pay respect to the Buddha, and the Buddha asked them, how was your rains? They said, oh, Bhante, the first month was fine. We dwelt in great comfort. But at the end of the first month, this is what happened, and as a result, we spent the next 2 months in great discomfort. And the Buddha said, well, that's not really how you should look at this. You shouldn't think like that. He said, this isn't something you should be concerned with. He said, just like those people, having been attacked by the bandits, undertook to protect their city, inside and out, fortify it, so too you should guard yourselves, guard your own minds, guard yourselves inside and out. And then he taught this verse. So the story offers a couple of lessons. First, it's a reminder of the uncertainty of life, that when the Buddha talks about not letting the moment pass you by, you have to remember that it can quickly pass you by. Circumstances in our lives, in our society, in our personal life, in our public life can change quickly. Our economic well-being can change quickly, societal well-being. War can erupt at any time. For many places in the world, there's constant warring. There are areas of the world that are right now, at this moment, embroiled in war, defending or attacking. And as the story reminds us, these are times where it's difficult to focus your energy on spiritual practice, either as a spiritual person like a Buddhist monk or as a lay person who is interested in getting into spirituality. We see now even the difficulty in travel, just for people to come to a meditation center in a great Buddhist country like Sri Lanka. It's not as easy as it once was. It's more expensive and there's difficulties with visas and this sort of thing. As the world becomes more disturbed, it becomes more difficult to practice spirituality. And it's a reminder that when we have the opportunity, we should take that opportunity. It's also a reminder to be careful, to not let worldly concerns distract us from spiritual concerns. It's all well and good to protect yourself from bandits or other dangers. But you have to make sure it doesn't come at the cost of discarding your spiritual practice, like discarding morality, discarding ethics, but also discarding generosity, to not forget to be kind to others around you. It can be quite difficult, especially as your own resources become strained. But the most important thing is the protection of our minds, and you can't protect your mind from bandits. Protecting yourself from bandits doesn't protect your mind. The protection of the mind, the protection of your spiritual well-being requires more than that, something quite different. The other lesson about the verse, of course, is the nature of spiritual practice. For someone who is engaged, as people who come to a meditation center, because the case of a Buddhist monk is a great example for someone even who isn't interested in ordination but interested in developing spiritual practice. The Buddha reminds these monks that their concern should not be to find comfort. It's antithetical to the reason for them to become a monk in the first place. The reason you become a monk is similar to the reason you become a meditator, and this is why this is an important lesson for for those of you who are not Buddhist monastics, who come to dedicate yourself to spiritual practice, to remember that it's a training. It's a voluntary submission of yourself, of your entire being, to difficulty, to a challenge. It's easy for new meditators, common for new meditators to become discouraged when they feel that their practice is uncomfortable. They think there's something wrong. They expected meditation to bring happiness. It promises freedom from suffering, right? Why is it so uncomfortable? Unpleasant sometimes even. But you think about these monks. Why did they become monks? Why did they put themselves in this situation where they had to rely on people to give them food? Why would they do that? Why would people give to these monks in the first place? We can even step back and ask ourselves. The answer is spiritual practice is something extra, something beyond ordinary activity. It's extra for the people who give gifts to the monks of food. People who often give food to monks, some people will every day when they see a monk coming for alms give a little bit, give something that they have. Why do they do this? They do this as a spiritual practice. Charity, generosity. The Buddha said if people knew the benefit, the spiritual benefit of giving, they would never once in their lives eat. As the Buddha said, they would never once in their lives eat without giving, sharing their food with someone if there was someone there to receive it. Charity is a spiritual practice, ethics is a spiritual practice, and meditation is a spiritual practice. Of course, these are extra practices. They're practices that strengthen your mind, that fortify the mind. Buddhist monasticism is a part of that training. You voluntarily submit yourself as a Buddhist monk to hardship, purposefully. You don't become a monk for ease. There's everything about it is make it harder. Make it harder in this way, make it harder in this way, challenge yourself in this way. Becoming a monk is an intentional challenge. Some people run away from society thinking, oh, I become a monk, I'll be free from all this trouble of society. And they miss the fact that it's going to be the most challenging thing they ever do. To live in seclusion, to live a celibate life, and to give up the affairs of the world and to give up the pleasures of the lay life. This is the example for meditators, a reminder that meditation is a similar training. Why do you do this? You do this to challenge yourself. You do this as a training. And we miss that this is the nature of training in general. Something that I find myself often having to remind meditators is, this is a training. This is similar to any physical or ordinary training you might undergo in a worldly sphere. If you train yourself in weightlifting, why do you do that? Why would you submit yourself to such torture? You're actually tearing your muscles every time you lift the weights. Why don't you lift something lighter, right? Why don't you lift something that's comfortable to lift? It's an absurd question, and we know this because we understand weightlifting is a training. It's on purpose difficult and uncomfortable, often painful. And we do it willingly, we relish it, we rejoice in weightlifting. We rejoice in exercise. People will run far, long distances, run every day. And it's quite tiresome and uncomfortable for the body, but we do it joyfully. Because it's training, because the result, the outcome, is a stronger body, a better, a healthier body, a more trained body. If you see where I'm going with this, what about the mind? Training the mind is absolutely no different. It is uncomfortable on purpose. Why? Because an untrained mind is lazy. An untrained mind is clingy. An untrained mind wants things to be a certain way and they can't be another way. And when you challenge yourself, of course, it's like a drug addict going through withdrawal. When you challenge yourself to experience things that are outside of your comfort zone, that's the nature of training. It's going to be uncomfortable. So this is what the Buddha was trying to remind these monks of, and it's a great reminder for all of us, especially those undertaking meditation practice. Don't be discouraged by the difficulty, be encouraged by it. Every moment of difficulty is strengthening your mind, and that strength is absolutely necessary, is essential, is the core quality that will allow you to break free from your addiction. If your mind is weak, you just chase after things. Go get what you want, run away from what you don't want, always whining. The mind is always whining and complaining, judging and reacting. It's just weak. Only a strong mind, a well-trained mind, can choose to be independent, can hold strong and be patient, patient with good things, patient with bad things, not clinging, not chasing away. This is what it is. It's a training. So it's important to understand that's what monastic life is, but that's what spiritual life is in general. This is in regards to the story. In regards to the verse, the Buddha gives us two pieces of advice. The first is to guard yourself. This is a way of describing the training. The training that we're doing is to fortify our defenses. It's a way of describing how the problems are not really intrinsic to us. The problems aren't with experience. You know, there's nothing really wrong with samsara per se. The problem is that there are things that we have to guard against. When I say that samsara isn't really a problem, what I mean is seeing is just seeing. Hearing is just hearing. It's like poison is not a problem unless you ingest it. Fire is not a problem unless you touch it. It is hot, and it's absolutely not something you want to touch. Poison is not something you want to ingest, but it can't harm you. Even the Buddha said some poisons you can hold in your hand, you can pour into your hand in a cup and have your hand full of poison. But as long as you don't have a cut, if your hand is not cut, you can hold the poison. I guess some poisons are like that. But if you have a cut, even the smallest bit of poison will poison you. So seeing is not a problem. Hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. And what that means is nothing is a problem. No experience is a problem. You see something, you say, oh, that is a real problem. You hear something, you hear a sound, problem. Smell, taste, feel, think. You think this thought is a problem. None of those things are the problem. The problem is what the Buddha called akantuka kilesa. Akantuka kilesa. Akantuka means guests, or invaders in this case, like the bandits. Kilesa means defilements. So defilements, our minds are not polluted by nature. Our minds are bright and radiant. But the defilements are like invaders that come in. And so the Buddha described this as the practice as a way of training your mind to be resilient to the invasion. Resilient against greed, resilient against anger, resilient against delusion. To have the clarity of mind to see experiences as they are without judgment, without reaction. So he likened it to guarding a city. You have to protect yourself, you have to fortify it outside and inside. And what does this mean? I don't really know how cities work, whether you have to really fortify internally. I thought it was mostly fortifying externally, but with meditation it certainly is external and internal. Externally you guard yourself by guarding the body. This is why we teach meditators at the very base, at the very outset, to walk mindfully, to stand mindfully, to sit mindfully, to lie mindfully, to eat mindfully, to work mindfully, to shower mindfully, to urinate and defecate mindfully. The Buddha was meticulous in his descriptions about doing everything we do mindful as a means of guarding our body. It means to guard your actions and to guard your speech. That's why we tell meditators not to chat, not to engage in idle chatter or speech, to speak only when it's truly necessary. You really shouldn't be engaged in frivolous speech, but that goes for everyone. These are lessons that you can take in your daily life. when you walk, try to walk mindfully. It's a way of guarding yourself, guarding your body, guarding your actions, guarding your speech, guarding your words. And internally, it means guarding the mind against the defilements. So when you see something, let it just be seeing. We say to ourselves, seeing, we're reminding ourselves, hey, look at that as only seeing, don't take it as something else. Hearing, remind ourselves, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. Learning how to do this is the core of the practice of mindfulness. Watching the stomach is a means of developing this skill. And the stomach rises, saying to yourself, rising. And the stomach falls, falling. When you walk, stepping right, and so on. When you experience pain, saying to yourself, pain, pain, guards the mind. The Buddha said, whatever, yani sotani lokasming sati te sang niwarayang, whatever streams, meaning channels there are for the defilements to poison us, mindfulness blocks them. Mindfulness protects us from them. So when you're mindful of pain, there's no room for disliking of the pain. New meditators are quite surprised at this idea and skeptical of it, thinking that the pain and the disliking of the pain are part and parcel. You can't possibly not dislike the pain, can you? And it's quite a relief to learn that actually pain isn't a problem and you can experience pain without suffering. Thoughts, mindfulness of thoughts, even our emotions, even when you do dislike something or like something, react to something, even those things the Buddha's taught us to guard, to catch, to face. You can't dispel it, you can't prevent it from arising, then just note it. When there is disliking, say disliking, 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 liking, liking. What you're doing is cutting it off. It's just that. That's all it is. You don't make more of it, you don't let it grow, you don't grow it to be something more than it is. This means guarding the mind. So the Buddha said, gopeta attanang, guard yourself internally and externally. This is a description of the practice of mindfulness. The second piece of advice he gives related to this is don't let the moment pass you by. So we guard ourselves now because we can't guard ourselves when it comes time when we're challenged, right? When the invaders come, it's already too late. And when difficulty or calamity comes in your life, it's too late to guard your mind at that point. When death comes, you can't decide to practice at the moment of death. And no matter what calamity you experience or don't experience in your life, ultimately, we are all going to face the calamity of death. If you say, I don't have to worry about war because war won't come to me, I don't have to worry about famine because it won't come to our country, I live in a country that is safe and secure, my relatives won't be kidnapped, I won't suffer this loss or this disease or this sickness, no matter how much you convince yourself that that's true, you have to, and everyone has to admit that in the end death will come to you. And you're not ready. If you're not ready for death, it's the worst calamity. Because as the Buddha said, nirayamhi samapita. If you're not ready for it, you can even be thrown into hell. If someone has great aversion and anger, they'll go to hell. If someone has great greed, they will be reborn as a ghost. These beings with mouths so small and stomachs so big that are always craving, always yearning, always wanting. If you have great delusion, doubt and confusion and arrogance and conceit, you'll be reborn as an animal. All of these are terrible places to be reborn. The Buddha reminds us that it's essential to do this sort of training because you can't avoid all calamity. Most people can't avoid most calamity. Most people will suffer loss, danger, you know, the fear of loss, even the threat of loss, economic hardship, relationship turmoil, and eventually old age, sickness, and death. Everyone will get sick, everyone will get old, and everyone will die. And a person with a weak mind will suffer from these things, will mourn and complain and eventually stress and despair because their minds are weak. They're not able to deal with, they're not able to face experience, they're not able to face reality. They only have a certain subset of reality that they're able to face. So the Buddha said, don't let the moment pass us by. Actually, the moment that we have is quite rare, more so than we might think. Some people might ask, what does this opportunity, what does this moment mean? I have any great opportunity to practice. No one should think that. No one alive, no one listening to this talk should ever think that. First, you have the opportunity to be born a human being. If you're not a human being, you can't understand the words. But if you're not a human being, more importantly, you can't cultivate the sorts of qualities that the Buddha encouraged us to cultivate. You can't better yourself in the ways the Buddha taught us to do. The second is you were born in the time of the Buddha. Buddhism is not always a part of the world. Buddhism is not always something that you're going to see in the world. 2,500 years ago, there was no Buddhism, and in 2,500 years, it's prophesized that there will again be no more Buddhism. For much of the history of mankind, there has been no teaching on the practice of mindfulness, no teaching on the Four Noble Truths, no teaching on the practice that leads us to see things clearly as they are and free us from attachment, craving, and clinging and suffering. The third opportunity that everyone has is we have the physical capability to practice. If you're able to listen to this, it means you're in a situation where you can practice mindfulness. You're physically capable to sit. If you're physically capable to walk, you're even more lucky. Able to do walking meditation, able to do sitting meditation. You're in a position where you're able to listen to the Dhamma. You're not in jail or you're not under duress where you're not able to listen to this talk. You're not able to find the Buddha's asana. And the fourth and most important thing that everyone listening to this talk has as well, most importantly, is you have the right view, the right intention. Unless you're listening to try and find fault with this practice or Buddhism or something like that, putting those people aside, anyone interested in these teachings has the greatest opportunity, and that is they have right view and right inclination, inclined towards spiritual things, inclined towards good things. It's a very rare opportunity that most people in the world don't have. Most people are not concerned with spiritual practice, and they're obsessed with sensuality, obsessed with worldly affairs, obsessed with ambition and wealth and relationships and things that are bound up with old age, sickness and death. And this is the rare opportunity. The Buddha said, we have these rare opportunities. Don't let it pass you by. And finally, the most important opportunity that we have is the moment that we have. And it's the moment that everyone has, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter your situation, whether you're within a war-torn land, whether you're in jail, whether you're under great duress or difficulty or trouble, the moment that we all have is, of course, the present moment. Everyone has this, and you always have it. No matter what failures you have in your life, ethical failures, moral failures, spiritual failures, even worldly failures, none of it prevents you from accessing the present moment. The present moment is available to everyone. And this is the true moment that the Buddha really intended for us not to let slip by. Because every moment that we're not mindful, we let this moment slip by. Right now, we're either mindful or we're letting the moment slip by. And every moment that you let slip by is a moment where the defilements have an opportunity to grow. Partiality, liking or disliking, can grow as a result of unmindfulness. You like something that you experience, you dislike, or you identify with it. You cultivate conceit or view, me, mine. You worry, you doubt the mind. You extrapolate, you make more out of things than they actually are. You turn things into something they're not. So when the Buddha said, take the moment, don't let the moment pass you by, this is the most important way to understand this, is to grasp the present moment, every moment. Any moment that you cultivate mindfulness, just saying to yourself, sitting, or walking, or pain, or thinking, or liking, or disliking, just noting the experiences, creates this clarity. It puts you in touch with the present moment. It grasps that moment, and it takes hold of it. And it strengthens your mind, and it begins this process of fortifying and strengthening the mind to give you the independence to not have to cling and expect and need things to be a certain way or not be a certain way, to be able to experience and confront reality without stress, without suffering, and thus to find peace, happiness, and freedom from suffering. So the lesson for us as meditators, take away, remember, this is a training, not a vacation. Might be not what you thought you signed up for, but it's all about challenging yourself. We challenge ourselves to eat less. We do it as a challenge because it's difficult, because it trains your mind, it helps to train your mind. We challenge ourselves to sleep less. People complain or become very concerned about the idea of not sleeping enough. You shouldn't be concerned. You should be thinking of it as a training, a challenge. And meditators who have gone through it can verify, they will often say, when they really dedicate themselves to it, they realize, it's true. When I slept so much, it was very difficult to see clearly. They're skeptical at first, because we're taught, you know, to be comfortable, you need so much sleep. Well, maybe don't worry so much about being comfortable. Focus on the clarity of your mind, the strength of your mind that requires training. The second lesson, the big one, is to not let the moment pass you by. Take this opportunity. We have this rare opportunity, and we have every moment we have an opportunity. Don't be discouraged by the past. Don't worry about the future. Right in the present moment, you have something that is incredibly valuable, like a buried treasure waiting to be dug up right in front of you. And it's always there for you to take it. So that's the Dhammapada, that's the Dhamma for today. Thank you for listening.